Good evening. It's been a beautiful day here in Terre Haute, and what better way to bring it to a close than by coming together, the Lord's people, and studying. We're glad you're here. Good to be with you. We're in 1 Samuel tonight. The keynote of the books of Samuel, Kings, and Chronicles is kingdom. Kingdom. In 2 Samuel 7, it came into David's mind to build a house for God, but God had other plans. He said in 2 Samuel 7, 12, "And when thy days be fulfilled, and thou shalt sleep with thy fathers, I'll set up thy seed after thee, which shall proceed out of thy bowels, and I will establish his kingdom." And in verse 16, "Thine house and thy kingdom shall be established forever before thee. Thy throne shall be established forever." The books of 1 and 2 Samuel get their name from their principal character, who anointed the other two principal characters, Saul and David. 1 Samuel has to do with Saul. 2 Samuel, David. This book begins with the birth of Samuel and ends with the death of King Saul. It ends the period of the judges. We looked at Judges and Ruth last Wednesday, and the first seven chapters of the book of 1 Samuel belong to the period of the judges. And then we'll transition to the period of the United Kingdom in 1 Samuel 8. There'll be three kings, Saul, David, and Solomon. Then we'll go to the period of the divided kingdom. We talk first about Samuel's judgeship. The first seven chapters of 1 Samuel belong to the period of the judges. And the book opens with Samuel's birth and boyhood. Samuel is one of the great characters of this book. He was devoted to the Lord before he was even born and served the Lord until he died. Goes down in history as one of the great men of God, of the book of God. He was a descendant of Levi through Kohath, as you look at the lineage in 1 Chronicles 6, 33 to 38. We're impressed with his father, Elkanah. It is said of him in verse 3, "This man went up out of his city yearly to what? Worship." If you'd been Samuel's father, would you have gone to worship and to sacrifice to the Lord of hosts in Shiloh? What was his mother's name? Hannah. What was her situation? She was barren. And she prayed unto the Lord about that, right? Verse 10 says, "In bitterness of soul, she prayed unto the Lord." Is your soul ever in bitterness? Take it to the Lord in prayer. And the Bible says she vowed a vow. What was her vow? Charles? Very good. And it was a vow of a Nazarite. He'd be a Nazarite, wouldn't he? Connect that statement in verse 11. "There shall no razor come upon his head." Samuel means verse 20, "Hannah conceived, bare a son, called his name Samuel, saying, because I've asked him of the Lord." Asked of God. Shows the power of prayer. And he was lent to the Lord, right? "I've lent him to the Lord," she said. How long? "As long as he liveth." It's a good expression. In verse 28. Remember when she prayed, she spake in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Verse 13. So when you pray, you don't have to pray out loud for God to hear you. Here's a silent prayer. She poured out her soul before the Lord. Verse 15. The Lord remembered her. Verse 19. Verse 26. The woman praying unto the Lord, "For this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition, which I asked of him." A good story about prayer. She was a woman of prayer. And one of the things you learn is that God, what? Answers prayers. You don't think God answers prayers? You wonder if God answers prayers? Talk to Hannah about that. Remember her prayer in chapter 2, 1 through 10? Verse 1 says, Hannah prayed. What impresses you about her prayer? What stands out? Anything in particular? Her rejoicing. God is in control. Right? The Lord killeth, maketh alive, bringeth down to the grave, bringeth up. The Lord maketh poor, maketh rich. He bringeth low, lifteth up, raiseth up the poor out of the dust, lifteth up the beggar from the dunghill to set them among princes, to make them inherit the throne of glory. He'll keep the feet of his saints. The wicked shall be silent in darkness. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. God is in control. It's one of the messages that come from Hannah's prayer. Samuel ministered unto the Lord as a what? Prophet? Judge? Child? Verse 18 of chapter 2 says, Samuel ministered before the Lord being a child. Some people think, I'll wait till when to start thinking about serving the Lord. I get old. What's the problem with that? You waste time and you may not get old. Not everybody grows old, right? So don't cheat yourself out of the opportunities that you have while you're young. He served the Lord as a child. Makes a good study of young people who serve the Lord, like Samuel, Timothy, maybe other people that you'd think of as well. We read in this section of Eli's rejection of Samuel's call. Eli's sons go down in history as sons of what? Belial. What does that mean? They were worthless. 1 Samuel 2:12. Who did they not know? The Lord. That expression has occurred before, hasn't it? The book of Judges. There arose a generation after them. That's the faithful generation. Joshua's generation had passed from the scene. And there arose a generation after them, which, Nicholas, knew not the Lord. And here we read of Eli's sons. What are their names? Hophni and Phinehas. Can you imagine? Who is Eli? Who is Eli? Priest. And his sons didn't know the Lord. Their wickedness is mentioned from verse 13 through 17. The sin of the young men was very great before the Lord. Very great. And in verse 22, they lay with the women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. They hearkened not unto the voice of their father. Verse 25. So a man of God comes on the scene, and what's he announce? Jared? Yeah, there shall not be an old man in thine house. 31 to 35 of chapter 2 would be fulfilled in the days of Solomon. So connect 1 Kings 2:27 to 35 to 1 Samuel 2:31 to 35. The Lord said he'd judge the house of Eli. In chapter 3, verse 1, what was precious? the word of the Lord. The Lord hadn't spoken. There had been no revelation from God for some time, and so the word of the Lord is precious. It's still that way. It's precious because of the fact that it comes from God. It's precious because it has saving power. You could make a long list of reasons why the word of the Lord is precious. We need to hear it, believe it, and obey it. Live by it, teach it to others. The Lord called Samuel, and his response was, John, speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. You ought to highlight that, verse 9 and 10. What a great attitude. We ought to have that attitude toward the Lord's word. Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. When we listen to the word read, taught, preached, is that your attitude? The Lord revealed himself to Samuel how? By his word. That's how the Lord reveals himself, by his word. Verse 7. Samuel did not yet know the Lord, neither was the word of the Lord yet revealed unto him. We know the Lord by his word. And then verse 21. The Lord appeared again in Shiloh, for the Lord revealed himself to Samuel in Shiloh by what? The word of the Lord. How did the Lord reveal himself? By his word. That's how the Lord reveals himself. That's a good point. I need to make note of that. Highlight that. The Lord reveals himself by his word. If you're going to know the Lord, you're going to have to read his word. What did all Israel, from Dan even to Beersheba, know about Samuel? Dan? He was. Verse 20. Samuel was established to be a prophet of the Lord. Acts chapter 4 through 7, we find the ark among the Philistines. Not Noah's ark, but the ark of the Lord, the ark of the covenant. Several things took place when Israel went out against the Philistines to battle. What happened? Becky, what's one? They were, verse 2, Israel was smitten before the Philistines. They slew the army in the field about 4,000 men. Verse 10 says, the Philistines fought and Israel was smitten and they fled every man into his tent. And there was a very great slaughter, for there fell of Israel 30,000 footmen. What else happened? They took the ark. Who took the ark? The Philistines. Verse 11, the ark of God was taken. What else happened? Eli's sons, Hophni and Phinehas, were slain. You remember back in chapter 2 and verse 34? It was said, and this shall be a sign unto thee that shall come upon thy two sons, on Hophni and Phinehas, and one day they shall die, both of them. That happened. Chapter 4, verse 11. Eli is 98 years old at this time. Verse 15. His eyes were dim. He could not see. When news reached him, what happened? Jason? Fell from off the seat backward by the side of the gate, and his neck broke, and he died. He judged Israel 40 years. His daughter-in-law, Phinehas' wife, was with child, near to be delivered. When she heard the tidings that the ark of God was taken, that her father-in-law and her husband were dead, what happened? Sent her into labor. And she died in childbirth. She named the child what? Ichabod, which means the glory is departed from Israel, because the ark of God was taken, because of her father-in-law and her husband. And she said, the glory is departed from Israel, for the ark of God is taken. No glory. No glory. A lot of things happened. A lot of things took place. The ark of the Lord was in the country of the Philistines. How long? 7 months. Chapter 6, verse 1. 7 months. Where was the ark? in the country of the Philistines. Different places. Ashdod. John? Gath. Where else? Ekron. Okay. House of Dagon. Several places. A lot of things happened, didn't it? What happened in those places? Pete? It really shows the folly of idolatry, doesn't it? When they brought into the house of Dagon, said about Dagon, 5:2, and they found him falling upon his face. They took him, here's a god. They had to take their god and do what? They set him in his place again. The God of heaven sets us in our place. We don't set him in his place. But here's a god of human invention that they had to set him in place. Then the next morning, falling upon his face, the head and both the palms of his hands were cut off. Only the stump was left to him. Only the stump. There was a deadly destruction. Remember, after the house of Dagon and Ashdod, there he's carried about unto Gath, but in Ashdod he destroyed them. Remember, the hand of the Lord was heavy upon them of Ashdod. He destroyed them, smote them with emerods. In verse 6, and then the ark of God of Israel was carried about unto Gath. Verse 8. You might circle these places: Ashdod, Gath. Then in verse 10, Ekron. But in Gath, a very great destruction. Verse 9, Ekron. And in verse 11, a deadly destruction throughout all the city. See? So, death and destruction in the country of the Philistines. So what did they decide to do? Send it away. With a trespass offering. Yeah. Remember the cart? They said, make a new cart. Down the road in 2 Samuel 6, the Lord's people are going to do that. But before, the Philistines have put on a new cart to send it back. Tie the kine to the cart and send it away. The people of Beth Shemesh were glad to see it. They rejoiced to see it, verse 13. What happened in Beth Shemesh? Curiosity got the best of them, didn't it? How many people? 50,070. Verse 19. 50,010. That'd be 50,070 men were smitten because they looked into the ark of the Lord. That's a lot of people in it. 50,000 plus. The ark abode in Kirjath-Jearim in the house of who? Abinadab, chapter 7, 1 and 2. And it'll remain there until David has it moved during his reign. Chapter 7, 3 through 17 mentions the deliverance by Samuel from the Philistines. When Samuel spake unto all the house of Israel, saying, it's one of the great appeals of the Bible, Samuel the prophet, and it really is a summation of the appeal of all the prophets that will speak to the house of Israel. It's an appeal to what? Return. Verse 3, return unto the Lord. I like that. If ye do return to the Lord with all your hearts and put away the strange gods and Ashtaroth from among you, and prepare your hearts in the Lord and serve him only, and he'll deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines. An appeal to return unto the Lord. What took place at Mizpah? Jared, verse 6. They did. They gathered together, fasted on that day, and said, "We have sinned against the Lord." Samuel judged the children of Israel in Mizpah. There's a great expression that appears in verses 8 and 9 when the children of Israel said to Samuel, "Cease not to cry unto the Lord our God for us. He'll save us out of the hand of the Philistines." And verse 9 reports Samuel did what? Cried unto the Lord for Israel, and the Lord heard him. You got to highlight that. Samuel goes down in history as a great man of prayer. He is outstanding among those who called upon the Lord. He himself was a child of prayer, wasn't he? Remember his mother, Hannah, who was barren? Cried unto the Lord, poured her out unto the Lord. She prayed for this child, and God remembered her and gave her the petition that she had asked. So he was the result of prayer. He gained his triumphs by prayer. And you think about this statement made by the psalmist in Psalm 99 and verse 6, Moses and Aaron among his priests, and Samuel among them that call upon his name. They called upon the Lord, and he answered them. That's what we're reading about. Now beside that statement, 1 Samuel 7, 9, Samuel cried unto the Lord. Make a note of Psalm 99, 6 and other places throughout the book of 1 Samuel where you find him crying unto the Lord or praying to the God of Israel. 1 Samuel 12, 17, 18, he said, "I'll call on the Lord." And Samuel called unto the Lord, and the Lord heard him and answered him. And then in verse 23, same chapter, he said, "Moreover, as for me, God forbid that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you." Chapter 15 and verse 11. Samuel cried unto the Lord all night. So when you think about Samuel, you think about a man who took it to the Lord in prayer. One of the great messages of the book of 1 Samuel is to pray. And God hears and answers prayer. What is Ebenezer? What in the world is Ebenezer, John? Verse 12. It's in connection with the Philistines. Remember, the Philistines drew near to battle against Israel. Chapter 7, verse 10. And Samuel took a stone, set it between Mizpah and Shin, and called the name of it Ebenezer, saying, "Hitherto hath the Lord helped us." Helped us. Stone of help. It appears in a song, doesn't it? Here we raise our Ebenezer. That's what that's referencing, this story. Stone of help. The Lord is our help. When you hear that word Ebenezer in spiritual usage, it has to do with help. God is our help. He's our rock. Right? What song is that, by the way? Anybody know? You knew we'd ask that, didn't you? That's your assignment for tonight. Find the song. It won't take too long for some. Ebenezer. The Philistines were blank. What goes in that blank? Subdued. And the cities which the Philistines had taken from Israel were restored. Restored to Israel. That ends the period of the judges. Next section takes us into the period of the United Kingdom. from 1 Samuel 8. Chapters 8 through 31 tell us of Israel's first king. What was his name? Saul. Israel would say, give us a king. Why'd they say that? Why'd they demand a king? Several things. What was one of them? Wanted to be like the nations. The nations around them had kings. Right? Give us a king. 1 Samuel 8, 5. Give us a king. Verse 5. Behold, thou art old. Had to do with the fact that Samuel was old. Showed some lack of respect for age, for one thing. And what about his sons? Walk not in thy ways. That had an influence. And they said, to judge us like all the nations. So several factors. The Lord's people have often been influenced by the people around them. Right? They wanted a king because the nations around them had kings. And it's not much different today. But this desire, this longing had been growing for some time, hadn't it? For a king. You remember they offered to Gideon back in the book of Judges, the crown, didn't they? They appealed to him to rule over them. Judges 8, 22 and 23. And Gideon refused that. He said, Lord shall rule over you. I'll not rule over you, neither shall my son rule over you. Judges 8, 23. And in fact, the law anticipated this request for a king in Deuteronomy chapter 17, 14 through 20. The Lord said, when thou art come into the land, and shalt dwell therein, and shalt say, I will set a king over me, like as all the nations that are about me. So that was anticipated. And it came to pass, 1 Samuel 8. How Saul described. Yes, a choice young man, goodly. Not among the children of Israel, a goodlier person than he, from his shoulders and upward, higher than any of the people. 9:2. Chapter 10, 23, 24, says when he stood among the people, he was higher than any of the people from his shoulders upward. There is none like him among all the people. He was sent to seek the asses. What happened on the journey? He went to find his father's asses. What happened? He was anointed to be captain over Israel. 1 Samuel 9 and verse 16. Anoint him to be captain over my people. Israel, that he may save my people out of the hand of the Philistines. For I have looked upon my people because their cry is come unto me. Saul had a good attitude at the first, didn't he? He said, am not I a Benjamite of the smallest of the tribes of Israel? My family the least of all the families of the tribe of Benjamin? Verse 21 shows his humility. He's made to sit in the chiefest place. Verse 22. He ate with Samuel, didn't he? He's given the anointing portion. Took up the shoulder and set it before him. So Saul did eat with Samuel that day. Verse 24, in chapter 10 and 1, Samuel took a vial of oil, poured it upon his head, kissed him and said, is it not because the Lord hath anointed thee to be captain over his inheritance? And the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. God gave him another heart. His reign begins with a great victory over who? The Ammonites. Chapter 11. The Spirit of God came upon Saul, took a yoke of oxen, hewed them in pieces, sent them throughout all the coast of Israel. They came out with one consent. And slew the Ammonites. They which remained were scattered, so that two of them were not left together. Verse 11. In chapter 12, Samuel reasons with all Israel. It's one of the great speeches of the book. He's now what? Aged. He's an old and gray-headed man. He said in verse 2, I am old and gray-headed. And he said, I've walked before you from when? My childhood unto this day. That's a great statement, isn't it? Walked before you from my childhood unto this day. And he said in verse 7, stand still that I may reason with you before the Lord of all the righteous acts of the Lord, which he did to you and to your fathers. Could you give a little summary of his speech, his reasoning? What do you highlight? What stands out to you? John, go ahead. Good job. Verses 14 and 15 have to be a highlight, wouldn't they? If you will fear the Lord and serve him and obey his voice and not rebel against the command of the Lord, then shall both ye and also the king that reigneth over you continue following the Lord your God. But if you will not obey the voice of the Lord, but rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then shall the hand of the Lord be against you as it was against your fathers. Chapter 13, you have Saul's ill-advised sacrifice. Remember the instruction that had been given back in chapter 10 and verse 8? Connect 10:8 with chapter 13. When Samuel told Saul, 7 days shalt thou tarry or wait. Four words you need to answer that question. Tarry till I come. Wait till I come, right? And then I'll show you what you ought to do. Did he wait? He grew impatient. Saul outgrew his patience. He was a man that outgrew God. In chapter 13, it came to pass in verse 8. He tarried 7 days according to the set time that Samuel appointed, but Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. And Saul said, bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. And it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of the offering, the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him. And Samuel said, what hast thou done? Saul said, because I saw that the people were scattered and that thou camest not within the days appointed, and the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash. Therefore, I said, the Philistines will come down. I've not made supplication to the Lord. I forced myself, therefore, and offered a burnt offering. What was the result? What, any consequences to that? Paulette? He'd lose his kingship. Samuel said in verse 13, thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God. And in verse 14, thy kingdom shall not continue. Might highlight that. Kingdom shall not continue. Verse 14. Here we're introduced to who? Jonathan, Saul's son. 13:3 mentions Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines in Geba. In chapter 14:1, Jonathan said something to his armor bearer. What was it? What did he say there? Come and let us go over to the Philistines' garrison. And here's a great statement. When Jonathan said to the young man that bears armor in verse 6, it may be that the Lord will work for us, for there is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few. One of the great statements in all the Bible. How to highlight that. When Saul asked counsel of God, he answered him not. Verse 37. Answered him not. So we read of the decline of Saul and the rise of David from this point forward. Chapter 15, you have highlighted the disobedience of Saul in Amalek. The Lord commissioned him. He said, I remember what Amalek did to Israel when he came up from Egypt. It goes back to the book of Exodus. I remember. And so he was commissioned to go and smite Amalek, utterly destroy all, spare them not. Did he do that? How did he disobey God, Richard? Verse 9 says, but Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and of the oxen and the fatlings and lambs and all that was good. You remember what told on him that he disobeyed God? What two things? Bleeding of the sheep, lowing of the oxen. Dead ox, dead sheep don't make any noise. These were bleeding and lowing. And we learned that partial obedience is total disobedience. Right? The great statement, verses 22 and 23, to obey is better than sacrifice and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and adultery. And as a result of this disobedience, he's rejected from being king. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king. That's 15:23. Then in verses 27 and 28, as Samuel turned to go away, what'd Saul do? Laid a hold upon the skirt of his mantle and it rent. And remember what Samuel told him? The Lord hath rent the kingdom of Israel from thee this day and hath given it to a neighbor of thine that is better than thou. Samuel hewed Agag in pieces before the Lord in Gilgal, verse 33. And Samuel came no more to see Saul until the day of his death, verse 35. Chapter 16, David is anointed as king. Note verse 7. Samuel thought the Lord's anointed was before him. He lied, but the Lord said, look not on his countenance, on the height of his stature, because I refused him. For the Lord seeth not as man seeth, for man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. Notice how David's described. He was ruddy and with all of a beautiful countenance and goodly to look to. Samuel took the horn of oil, anointed him in the midst of his brethren, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon David. You see a pivotal point here. When the Spirit of the Lord came upon David, verse 13, but the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, verse 14. And David became Saul's armor bearer, verse 21. Chapter 17, you have David and Goliath. Quite a difference between Saul and the rest of Israel and the shepherd boy. Scene of great faith. David triumphed over the giant by faith. He put his trust in the Lord. He said, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion, out of the paw of the bear, he'll deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine, verse 37. Verse 45, thou comest to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, verse 46. He said, the battle is whose? The Lord's, verse 47. He prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone and cut off his head with his own sword, didn't he? Chapter 18, you have one of the great friendships of the Bible. Jonathan and David. Jonathan loved David, but Saul envied him. The soul of Jonathan was what? Knit, K-N-I-T, knit, with the soul of David. And Jonathan loved him as his own soul. When the Women came, what'd they say when David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine? Yeah, they attributed thousands to Saul, but to David, his 10,000s. And the Bible says Saul eyed, E-Y-E-D, eyed David from that day forward. 18:9, that's a good passage to highlight. He cast what at him? The javelin, for he said, I'll smite David even the wall with it. Verse 11. And he's going to give him his daughter in marriage. But what was his thinking? That she may be a snare to him. Verse 21. And that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. See? And verse 29 says, Saul became David's enemy continually. Enemy. So you find Saul's pursuit of David takes up a good chunk of the book, 19 through 28. Saul seeks David's life, but David escapes. A lot of things take place. Saul's house in chapter 19, David's house. You got the covenant of Jonathan with David in chapter 20. And that statement when David said, there is but a blank between me and death. What is it? Step. Just a step. That's true of us, isn't it? A lot of ways. Just a step between us and death. It's an appointed step, Hebrews 9:27. It's a separating step as the spirit separate from the body, James 2:26. It's a departing step. Paul said, the time of departure is at hand. A lot of things that could be said about the step of death. What David eat at Nob? Hallowed bread. Remember that? 1 Samuel 21. The Lord made reference to that, answering the Pharisees in Matthew 12. And they gave to him Goliath's sword in verse 9. These are the places you find David going as Saul's pursuing him. Some of the things that take place. A lot of good lessons to be learned from Saul's pursuit of David from these chapters. What happened at Nob? Saul did what? Killed the priest, didn't he? 85 priests of the Lord. 22:18-19. But Abiathar escaped, verse 20. David saved Keilah from the Philistines in chapter 23. There's a statement in the wilderness of Ziph in chapter 23, verse 14, where Saul sought him every day, but God delivered him not into his hand. In fact, David had occasion to kill Saul, but he spared him. Not once, but twice, didn't he? Cut off the skirt of his robe. Why wouldn't he kill him? Why'd he spare him? He didn't want to lift up his hand against the Lord's anointed. It's a great statement, isn't it? 24:6, 26:9. Saul said to David, thou art more righteous than I. Thou hast rewarded me good, whereas I rewarded the evil. So it's a good place to find illustrated the principle of overcoming evil with good, returning good for evil. Samuel died in chapter 25, 28:3 talks about it. Remember Nabal and Abigail? Abigail is one of the great women of the Bible. She was a beautiful woman, had a good understanding. Her husband described as a fool. Right? He's a fool. Nabal, doesn't his name mean fool? Good story. And she'd become David's wife after Nabal died. Remember the spear and cruse of water David took from Saul at Ziph, 26:12, and again spares his life. He went to the country of the Philistines and he dwelled there how long? Over a year, wasn't it? About a year and a half? Year and 4 months? Year and 4 months, 27:7. The Philistines fight with Israel. Saul, forsaken by God, seeks to a what? A witch. Resorts to witchcraft. And when Saul inquired the Lord answered him not. 28:6. Neither by dreams, nor by Urim, nor by prophets. And you remember what Samuel revealed to Saul in that little episode? And you know, the woman was surprised, wasn't she? She's taken by the fact that it shows the deceptive nature of that practice. She was shocked to see Samuel appear. The Lord used that to reveal something to Saul. What was revealed to him, Jason? Very good. Verse 17, the Lord hath rent the kingdom out of thine hand and given it to thy neighbor, even to David, because thou obeyest not the voice of the Lord. And he said in verse 19, tomorrow shalt thou and thy sons be with me. That's an announcement of death. He's basically reading tomorrow's obituary today, isn't he? David departed from Achish, recovered all that the Amalekites are carried away, and then you have the death of Saul happen, just like Samuel said, chapter 31, when the Philistines fought against Israel. Verse 2, the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, Saul's sons. And Saul was wounded by the archers and took a sword and fell upon it, verse 4. His armor bearer did the same. So Saul died, his three sons and his armor bearer and all his men that same day together. Verse 6. And so the book ends with the death of Saul. He reigned by the space of how many years? 40, according to the history in Paul's sermon at Antioch in Acts 13 and verse 21. By the space of 40 years. And several of the Psalms belong to this period. And we'll look through those Psalms when we get to the book of Psalms during the poetry department. So 1 Samuel tells of Israel's first king. We've covered about 115 years of history in this one book, 115 years in about 40 minutes. Isn't too bad, is it? 2 Samuel will tell of Israel's second king, David. Charles? He came up with, thank you, sir. Number 420. O thou fount of every blessing. Thank you very kindly. That's the song. What's the word? Ebenezer. That's the song. If you want to make a note of that. O thou fount of every blessing. Thank you for being with us tonight. I've enjoyed the study.